It's vinyl. Vinyl and not vinyls. Vinyls, there's no...
So vinyl is plural.
Vinyl is plural, but...
You can say it's not.
It's singular and plural.
Yeah.
I was going to say, it's like deer or fish or mice.
Saying the wrong information. I'm like,
not.
Hold on, are we on the wrong page?
I'm not. See, people get it when I say it, though.
I was just trying to make sure I knew. I knew.
No, and I'm not trying to throw shade at anybody here today, but I'm just saying. Yeah, but I hear that all the time. Oh, great, because we're recording. I might as well say this. When we're dealing with, like, Serato, there's a different...
Recording?
We are. We are dealing with... Hi, everybody. Welcome to...
All right.
Welcome to, right. You know...
Improvise, improvise.
I'm a sneaky bitch.
When you're dealing with, like, there's different frequencies and there's different needles that give off different sounds and different outputs. For instance, there's ortophones that have, which are pretty much kind of pointy. They look pointy in style and everything. You can switch those out for, like, scratching or digital or, you know, because time-coded records, time-coded vinyl are not the same as regular records. So yeah, and regular records, some of them, depending on what year they were made, this is the reason why there's like 180 grams and all that other stuff. There, as our cousins like to say, it do be a difference. So yeah, so like, you know, how it's been repressed, remastered, how it's been mastered, how it's been engineered, everything like that comes down to the grooves within the vinyl and also how the needle receives it. So, so it is, and it's an expensive hobby. It's an expensive way of life and everything like that. But at the same rate, if you have, you know, enough knowledge, you can be able to get, you know, something that is worthwhile, not something that only lasts a couple of years and also destroys your records too. Cause you do want to have your records as long as you want. I mean, well, at least I do. A lot of people don't. I get it. It's a fad for some people, but it's also a way of life for others, you know? Yeah. So, hi, everybody. Thank you very much. I'm Bada, and thank you very much for coming to this. Anyway, I'm sorry.
No, you can go. Kick it off.
Then we can do our cheers and let Bada take it away.
No. I think that's how I'm going to open it up.
Bada is greeting on us to Conte.
Cheers.
Yes.
But I got it in this very appropriate.
This is what, episode 3, Gay Icons. All right.
It is us, the Gay Icons.
Hey,
this is the homosexual agenda.
Is that Gay Icon Jax?
Yo, have we decided on what we're calling our next spin listener family? Have we come up with catchy? We are so behind. This podcast will probably be on episode 10 before we release it and get everything worked out. You're right.
Sausage. How appropriate.
I feel like there's going to be a lot of puns going on.
Yeah, I'm telling you. Let's just add this up, for real. Let's see how prideful we can be.
All right. Well, look, I'm just going to call them Next Spin Family. Next Spin Family. Welcome, next spin family, because there's two X's. Next Spin Family, welcome to episode 3 of the Next Spin podcast. That's the name that I know so far, and that's the name I'm going to run with it. I am one of your hosts, Bader Milligan, and I am joined by my a beautiful ensemble of not only co-hosts that you've heard before on the mic, but we've got new friends, and we've got an icon here with us, you know, someone that I deem as a music guru and icon, as a special guest. We've talked about having him on since like our first meetup. So I'm glad to have him on. But let me go and introduce everyone real quick. We got Freddie to my left.
Yo.
We're still working on Freddie.
We have a sober Freddie because it's been 3 different ones.
You're right.
We've the beginning of drinking Freddies.
Yeah, we had High Freddie first episode. We had... moderate Freddy last episode, and we got completely sober Freddy this episode. A lot of progression going on. And then first timer on the mic, our CEO, our founder of this group, Next Spin founder, Tony Smilicic, is on the microphone. A rare appearance.
Smilicic.
I'm pretty sure I said that. If I hit replay, I'm sure I said it. But Tony's on the microphone. I know most people think that he's kind of like a phantom in the back anytime we have these meetups. But we got him on the mic because today is his topic. But we'll get to him here in a second. I want to finish our introductions. We got a new friend joining us here today. Michael is on mic number 3. We're sharing a mic with Freddie. There we go.
Hello, hello, hello. A big gay welcome to everybody.
Thank you. That's what we were missing. Thank you so much, Michael. Of course, we got the Don himself, a.k.a. Stefan, here with us.
Yerp.
And then last but not least, that music guru, a.k.a. icon that we've been looking... I know you're gonna get tired of all the props I'm going to give you, but we got Mr. Nick Fresh himself here with us, joining us today. Round of applause for Nick Fresh. Woo! Nick Fresh.
No, I won't get tired of any of the props that you give me.
That's right. Your head inflates as large as mine does, so that's good. But like I said, folks, this is our episode 3, and by now you should know that we are the Next Spin Collective, a.k.a. a vinyl collective here in Jacksonville, Florida. We're comprised of a bunch of millennial friends of different professions and backgrounds, united through our shared passion for music, mostly in the analog form. Every month we meet up and do a vinyl meetup. We pick a theme. Everyone gets a chance to pick a theme. And we bring records according to the theme. And we share, you know, just a good time. We play music and share stories and anecdotes and what these records mean to us. It was Tony's turn to go ahead and pick the theme. And Tony, you picked gay icons. Go ahead and introduce the theme and tell us why you chose it.
chose gay icons as, I don't know, I just thought it would be interesting to see what people bring. And the more I thought about gay icons, it made me question what was actually a gay, or who was a gay icon, and what made them a gay icon, and how they actually established themselves as that. Do they know they are gay icon? I went through a million questions and a million Google searches, and yeah, it just made it a lot more interesting for me.
Because I feel like this theme kind of went through a couple iterations, or you fine-tuned it a couple times. I know, like, when we were doing our earlier meetups and kind of tossing ideas out of future themes, you had said, I think it was just gay artists, period. Mm-hmm. And then I think when we met last month, you were like, actually, gay artists or gay icons, which kind of broadened it up a little bit more. Mm-hmm. But it also left a lot of, I think, like you just kind of hinted at, a lot of gray area. Much like our Neo Soul night, where we ended up spending half of the time talking about what conforms to Neo Soul.
Sade Neo Soul?
Sade is definitely Neo Soul. All right, we are not having this debate again. All right, but this was another interesting theme that I thought left a lot of room for interpretation. Did anyone else have an interesting time kind of looking at their collection and wondering what artists or records they had kind of fit in that theme, or was it very clear for anyone?
So when Tony texted me about this meetup, my first question was, is it just going to be gay people that I'm bringing? Or is it like what is the actual prompt here? I want to know what I'm getting myself into. And when I really looked at the vinyls that I had, what I realized is that I really, because I also listen to music, obviously, in other forms. But the vinyl that I like to vinyl... Singular.
Don't you dare.
I caught myself there, right?
I will find
Nick's
you.
About to jump over the table and get me.
All day.
But when I looked at the vinyl that I had in my collection, I realized that the ones that I like want to have physically are ones that like influenced me as a music lover. And what I realized is that a lot of the music that I do listen to is very gay, very queer, or somehow relates to like my coming up as a music lover. So it wasn't really that difficult for me to pick which ones to bring. I just had to decide which ones probably no one else would bring.
I'm going to look to you, Nick, because I don't know how many of our listeners understand this, but you are a fantastic DJ who's got a super impressive collection from what I've gleaned just from your social media pages. How hard or easy was it for you to go ahead and hone in on your records and pick out artists or selections for tonight?
You know, it was, I think, piggybacking on what Michael was saying, I think it was more so just trying to find records that didn't necessarily, they weren't expected to be brought. Yeah, I wanted to find things. I knew exactly when Tony sent me a message. And first of all, I feel very fortunate to be here. Thank you. Because really, you know, I could be at home doing nothing.
But instead you came here and upped our cool points by like, you know, 20,000.
We up in here. No, I really just, yeah, I mean, just to really talk about records and what I love about, you know, certain artists and everything. And within the, I guess, quote unquote, gay genre, if that's, you know, LGBT kind of realm, because there's also, you know, different factors, not only the personal factor of, okay, you know, whether, you know, it's, I guess, how you identify and how it resonated the most with you. But also, I think it's more so about pretty much how they are identifiable within the LGBT community, you know? And as I was coming up, there was this preconceived notion when it came to artists, you know, I always found, you know, the strong female lead to be, or the strong female type to be the gay icon, you know, your Rihanna's, your Beyonce's, Aretha Franklin's, Diana Ross, definitely Diana Ross, Barbara Streisand, you know, yeah, snaps in the air for that, you know, Bette Midler, who, by the way, do not sleep on Bette Midler, y'all. I'm just saying, Bette Midler's got some heat, pitch, intonation, some great tone, everything. And she had some badass backup singers who later did disco records and all that other stuff. But, and other things on Broadway and all of that. But anyway, that's how I always identified it as. But as we continue to go on in this life and, LGBT, community is now becoming a little bit more mainstream, we're now seeing that scope broaden. So basically I'm answering your question with, not even an answer. It's just really just looking at it and just saying, okay, well, what is gay to me? And I do feel that it's a little bit of all of that. Just, you know, the stuff that I was raised on that resonated with me the most. But then also, you know, kind of what I saw and I always perceived as, well, this was for the gays, you know, and these figures were for the gay, you know, people and all of that. So, yeah.
Damn, that was really well said, Nick.
I hope so.
No, absolutely. Well, thank you.
I hate rambling, you know.
Not at all.
After being on your other podcast, you know, 8 hours of just me talking.
No, not at all, brother. I wanted to go to Freddie real quick because, you know, we're back in Tony and Freddie's place. How challenging was it for you guys to go ahead and kind of hone in on this theme and pick out your records?
Well, obviously, me and him live together, so. When I asked him, like, so what exactly are you going for here? Do you want gay icons or icons that are idolized by the gay community? And he told me he kept it broad, and I was like, cool. But for me specifically, I wanted to use gay icons, people that are gay, that speak up for the gay community.
Right on.
And are we leaning into what we actually brought?
Not just yet. I want to save that one. But you're getting to a good spot because I had the same kind of thought process, too. I was like, well, if I'm looking at my collection, I don't have a lot of LGBT artists themselves. But I do have a lot of artists that support, you know, support the culture and are advocates. So I wasn't quite sure. But then when Tony kind of refined it, it was like, well, you know, we're looking at icons and those that, you know, stand up for our brethren in that scope. It definitely made it a lot easier and actually gave me a reason to go to the record shops this morning and try to hunt like a madman. And I realized that when you're looking for a vinyl, you never can find it. But God forbid, if you're just out and about, you will find. I was looking for Queen and like Prince records and Elton John records. I'm like, man, I know I've seen these records on random Tuesdays, like on the side of the road. Yeah, you want this? Nah, I'm good. But when I need it, it's like I cannot find that at all. So it was definitely a fun experiment for myself to kind of like look at my records and then like look at the artists that I enjoy and who would fit in this scope, much like our Neo Soul Night as well. Of course, I got like super kind of nerdy and geeky with it and decided to see like what our homeboy Wikipedia and Google had to say about it. And there is a entry for LGBT music, and they define it as music that focuses on the experience of gender and sexual minorities as a product of the broad gay liberation movement. And the cultural origins, I mean, it dates back to as early as like 1890s in like New Orleans with like jazz musicians like Tony Jackson and Bessie Smith. Like, you know, they were speaking about, you know, gay lifestyle. And then, you know, you really had seen it like kind of ramp up. And I give them like a very high level overview. And Nick, if you feel like if I'm missing anything, or if you want to chime in anything, feel free to jump in. But 1970s, like UK and US music, you know, with like disco and glam rock, you started to see like more mainstream kind of gay artists kind of come to the forefront. And then, of course, like in the 80s, you started seeing like more gender bending, you know, cross-dressing become more popular with like George Michael, Culture Club, Pet Shop Boys. And then you also started seeing, you know, LGBTQT relationships and visuals kind of incorporate themselves into music videos. I think one of the earliest U.S. top 40 singles to feature like positive depictions of LGBT community was Lou Reed. Is a song from 1972, Walk on the Wild Side. I think that was like the first time, like in a music video, that you started seeing like, oh, okay, there's like some gay undertones here, or, you know, actual just like just very straightforward. And then, of course, you know, fast forward to 2000s, you start seeing like LGBT music branch off into its own genre. You had, you know, people like Lady Gaga, Christina Aguilera, the Scissor Sisters, et cetera, et cetera. Like more and more artists were starting to support and spread the message of equality and positivity. You know, it wasn't taboo to have it just kind of like, you know, face front in your videos, or just to come out and say, yeah, I completely support the LGBT community. I know that was like a big info dump. Nick, do you want to add anything? Like, are there any artists that do you feel like really kind of push the boundaries, whether they were gay themselves or an advocate for the LGBT community?
Oh, man. Actually, one of my selections is that. We'll get to him in a minute. But it's also around the 70s and actually late 60s, 70s when he came about. So I don't want to spoil it all, you know? I don't want to spoil it all. But yeah, I think as we get older, and I think as the world gets a little bit older as well, we're starting to realize that, you know, everybody, not only is there an audience for everybody, but also you cannot hide the fact of who you really are and what exactly moves you. You know, there's a place for everyone. And musically, we don't have to be fit in a complete box. The landscape is so huge, you know, that why not? You know, artists that are within the LGBT spectrum or community, whether they're gay themselves or they are admired by the LGBT community, why can't they put out records that, you know, specifically hit, you know, toward the LGBT community? So, yeah. And I'm glad that we're seeing it in our lifetime.
Absolutely.
Absolutely.
Tony, I was curious, what was your first, like, conscious exposure to a, whether they were, you know, gay themselves or just an advocate for the community? What was like one of your first conscious exposures to listening to a gay music icon?
I think it was just kind of natural for the selections that I was listening to. It was what I was drawn to. I didn't know they were gay icons until later. That's just who I was drawn to.
Like, so
it was
who? Like who?
So let's say when I was living in Germany, so it was still like, I was maybe 6, 7. It was like Tina Turner. So it was like listening to her or watching her videos or watching her perform. It's just going back to like what Nick said, was like the strong female presence. That's what always attracted me to these characters, not characters, but musicians. Yeah. And then, I mean, even moving here, it was like, you know, Destiny's Child and Janet Jackson and Britney Spears, or which I think Britney Spears is a bigger gay icon than Christina Aguilera, but,
I guess it's neither here or there. That was an opinion.
What attributes do you think that they had or displayed that made them gay icons?
Because
I mean,
a lot of times it's theatrics, like just presenting themselves, like taking a visual. The visual component is always taken into consideration. So whether that's music videos or how they perform or whatever, like they just go, they add on another layer. They're just a little bit more over the top than the straight counterparts usually.
So
it's like watching Beyonce perform versus watching
Taylor Swift.
Right.
But yo,
that was a diss.
But don't get it twisted though. Yeah, the Swifties will go after you now.
Yeah,
seriously,
Freddie?
Don't do it.
I got the beehive behind me. We good.
So I saw Michael hyping up some of your comments, and I wanted to hear from Michael. What are some attributes of a gay icon in music?
Yeah, I mean, I totally resonate with a lot of what Tony was saying. And I think that in general, queer people gravitate to symbols of sex, but more like the ability to express sex the way that they want to. Like, Britney was very unapologetic when she stepped into that, you know, in the zone, like Britney era, like music. She was really just owning her body, owning her sex, owning her, you know, her body and all that kind of stuff. And she kind of set a stage where queer people could resonate with that and see themselves and like, oh, like this woman is kind of like stepping out and doing everything she wants to do with her career. Like, I can see myself doing that too. Like, I could live in my truth. I can be who I want to be. And I think that's why a lot of queer people see these really strong, powerful, you know, driven women and say, you know, that's me. You know, like, that's who I want to emulate when I, you know, feel myself. And I think that, like, men do that too, in a way. Like, there's a hell ton of male artists that do, like, embody all of those same things. But I think in the way that a lot of women have been able to break out of that mold, especially because as women, they're marginalized in their own way.
They're already underdogs.
Exactly. Yeah, like, exactly. Like, queer people in general will be able to identify with that a lot more.
Yeah. I'm glad you said that, though, about, you know, women being underdogs and gay figures being underdogs, because, of course, we are all underdogs. But at the same rate, when it comes to folks that are admired the most, there's always seems to be a tragic story behind them, like Whitney Houston, you know, or, you know, Janet Jackson went to control, or, you know, Aretha Franklin was a teenage mom. And, you know, all of a sudden she rises out of those ashes where it could have been something that was damning to her that could have kept her in Detroit. She managed to become the greatest voice of all time. You know, so, I mean, yeah, I think that's one of the things, you know, Dolly Parton, you know, having those Don't Drop Out songs and things like that, just being a ubiquitous figure, you know?
Yeah, it's also just saying that when men also embody that same energy, for women, you're breaking through so many more barriers to get that out. With men, when I think of that same kind of moment, I think of things like Prince, where men are almost kind of expected to be sex symbols, because that's like a very masculine kind of thing, is to, you know, be always like this big sex figure or like masculine energy. And the way that I think queer people resonate with men doing that is when they kind of break those same kind of roles and, you know, rules about what men can do as sex symbols. Is it just like the straight macho thing, or is it like Prince, where he's like showing his, you know, ass crack or like booty? Like, right. You know, like, what is it? And those are the real jaw dropping moments where queer people can say, oh, like, that's a straight man, but like, I can see myself in a lot of that.
Honestly, I believe that that's the reason why Prince did so well. And I think that's why the glam rock era and also the hair metal era before, you know, people started to find a formula for that. That's why that did so well, because it was, once again, as Michael said, it's a whole different kind of way that you perceive a man, you know. And still, these mans. And them's up in hills.
Finals. Plural.
Okay. Singular and plural, dudes and dudettes. Okay. And non-binaries. Shout out to y'all. But definitely, you know, what was I saying? I don't even know what I'm saying. I don't know. You know,
Adrian, I'm going to go to you, because me and you, you know, as a fellow straight man here as well, I'm curious about your first conscious exposure to a gay icon or within music.
You know, for me, it was, you know, like you said, I just didn't have much exposure to, you know, being told what gay was or anything like this when I was a kid. My parents just didn't talk about it. But then you see, like you said, Prince. My dad played a lot of Prince too. And I'm like, man, it's, you know, this guy is not the kind of the stereotypical straight dude, but all the straight people love them. So I was like, all right, well, you know, there's something to, you know, the way you express yourself, you know what I mean? And so that was, I mean, I know he's not gay, but that was like the first person that I really enjoyed their music. Mm-hmm. And so that like other, you know, gay homies enjoy the music as well.
I think Prince was the first one that made me realize like, okay, you know, like once again, I'll say like that they're not every artist. You know, I think I was trying to put them all in a box.
Yeah,
I didn't even think about sexuality within music in that regard. Like, I knew there was sexy music. You know, you're talking about, you know, making love and things. But I never thought about their orientation.
100%.
You know, I just always assumed, oh, everyone is straight within the music
100%.
Industry. And that was clearly not the case, you know, as I got older.
And that's the thing that has really been illuminated for me in this conversation. And that's why, like, I love this group. It's awesome. It's like I'm exploring a new medium in mm-hmm. terms of, like, listening to music on vinyl, not vinyls. Mm-hmm. And also it's like you know having these types of conversations and listening to other folks' perspective on it, it helps to like add another dynamic to my music consumption. You know what I mean? Hmm. And so that's, and like you were saying, like exactly right. I didn't think about orientation at all because obviously the way that this is whole, you know, this whole society is structured, like everything is, you know, hetero first and then everything mm-hmm. else second, you know. But that's something that's helping me break that down. You know what I mean? And so I think that same thing can happen for other folks. So this is dope.
Well said. Freddie, I'm going to go to you because I want to hear what albums you brought today and what was the reasoning or inspiration.
I'm looking forward to this, y'all.
He's about to judge.
I'm like, I didn't want to go first.
He's like, is that an original release? Is that 180 gram?
So all my picks are actually basic, but I love these albums. And I think a lot of other people do too. My first pick is Lady Gaga, the Fame Monster.
Lady Gaga.
I mean, this album right here, the videos, she broke barriers for my generation. I mean, there's previous people that did it before her, but she, for us, for millennials, I think this is the beacon for what speaking your truth looks like, especially for a woman, which... I'm like, there's no women here. That's
sad. Well, I mean, it is a gay icon night, so right. Approach.
My second pick is Catriona, which I actually recently found out that he's Same. Gay. And I watched his interview. I mean, he kind of nonchalantly said it, but...
But I like that it was nonchalant because at the end of the day, it's like, well, what does that have to do with how good his fucking music is?
Yeah. Exactly. And that was fine with me.
Yep.
Right. And I was like, I guess you don't, maybe I'm always looking. I'm like, well, you need to be speaking. You need to be going like blah, blah, blah. Right. I'm like, no, like, I mean, I'm not doing all that stuff. So.
Why should I expect anyone else to do it?
And my third pick is Samuel Frederick Smith.
Skinny Sam Smith, everybody. Skinny Sam Smith, that is.
I think he's one of the few male artists that came out immediately when he dropped.
It's kind of obvious.
He's like, I'm gay. I'm British. And this is me. Here's a sad album.
Yeah.
With a couple of dance songs.
But I tell you though, even with Sam Smith though, I mean, I'm telling you, I mean, the way that he resonated with so many people, it wasn't just gay folks. Like I noticed right off the bat, the black community accepted Sam Smith so hard with Stay With Me and everything that now it's like anytime somebody comes up with Sam Smith, I'm seeing that on black charts or urban charts, which I think is just as offensive. Well, I like being called black. I don't like being called urban. No, hell no.
I'll be honest, real quick. I thought Sam Smith. I didn't see what Sam Smith looked like until many years after right. the fact. I just always thought it was a black dude singing.
Pretty
like,
much,
oh,
yeah.
This is a black dude that must have grown up in the choir or something.
The ghetto.
I just want to say too, Sam Smith is genderqueer and their pronouns are they/them.
They/them.
Just,
thank you.
Just
I appreciate
that's
it.
That's not really like that known, but I just wanted to just
thank you
for just
thank
the sake
you.
Of the
I
conversation.
Learned something new.
Absolutely.
My today bad, I learned. Thank you, Michael. Expansion. Okay. Right on, Sam.
Good there was definitely them. Someone listening like these motherfuckers better call him by his right pronoun.
I know, seriously. We are not
thank God for Michael.
We are not trying to dead name anybody. We're not trying to dead pronoun anybody for sure.
I didn't say the album names. I apologize. It's Sam Smith, Love Goes. You know, I think his first album is the best one, but that's what I'm playing. This is Catriona's. Nick, do you remember?
99.9,
right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I said the first one, Fame Monster for Lady Gaga. Thanks. And such a test to music because... music really brings people together. It doesn't matter, black or white, gay, straight, like, you got to really give a round of applause to art in general.
For sure.
Of how music brings people together.
Absolutely. Beautifully said. Freddie always come through with some beautiful soliloquy.
I'm telling you.
All right. I want to hear what Michael brought. Michael, what you bring?
My turn.
Vinyl Club debut, too. So,
Vinyl
extra
Club
proud.
Debut. Hello, y'all. So, yeah. So, I had a real fun time picking my albums because, like, I really enjoy queer music. I enjoy queer people and queer community. So, like, that's always been what I really like to listen to. So, I guess I'll just go through in the order I have it right here. I picked the Rocky Horror Picture Show soundtrack for one of them. This is, like, one of my favorite musicals. I'm also like a big theater kid. That was like my thing in high school. And the Rocky Horror Picture Show soundtrack, or just like the movie and musical in general, was kind of like a boundary breaking moment in the 70s. Like, not many people were exposed to any sort of queer life or experience. And this was kind of different from the way that queer people were expressing themselves at that time. It was more like, we are here and we need y'all to humanize us. Like, we're not just these people on the outskirts. We are people. So it was more like an assimilation kind of thing. As of now, you know, queer people are just like breaking every sort of boundaries. We're like, we're not in any kind of box. Like, you can't define us. Back then it was more about survival. So it was a little less blunt, I guess. But this was so, like, for that time, out of the box, like, ridiculous. And Tim Curry's in the movie, like, dressed up with, you know, tights and fishnets and a wig on. And, like, it's just, I remember watching it for the first time and being so in awe that, like, this could have even happened. Even today, coming out, I've been like, oh my God, like, there's no way. So, like, watching it, I've been to the show, like, multiple times. It was kind of like a thing for Halloween every year for me to go to, like, a live performance.
I've always wanted to go.
It's I would definitely.
It looks cool as hell.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So your first time going, they're going to put a V in lipstick on your forehead, which means virgin. And they're going to, like, fuck with you. They're going to, like, mess with you. They, like, go out to the crowd and, like, pull you up and, like, do weird shit to you. It's, like, really great.
That's cool.
But it's a whole immersive experience, because that's what gay.
It's traumatizing. It's traumatizing, but it's great. It's great.
It's traumatizing in the best way.
Scarlet Letter.
It's an immersive experience, but, like, what about the queer and gay experience is not immersive? You know, if you're gonna have a real authentic moment like that, so
this is a drag show,
right? If you're at a drag show, you're gonna get immersed into it. If it's a real good drag show, you're gonna be immersed into that experience. So this is also in the same way, like that. And what I just also realized recently was the creator of the musical is trans. And a lot of times, like, because I'm a theater kid, a lot of queer theater media is created by straight people for gay people. Like, Rent was actually, like, composed and written by a white straight man, which I did not know. Right. And also, like, apparently, like, the story was kind of, like, hijacked from a lesbian writer, playwright. So, like, that just always kind of, like, sat with me. Like, this is so weird that, like, this is made for queer people, but, like, not by a queer person themselves. And when I found out that this musical was created by a trans person, I was like, this is makes it even better for me, honestly. Real great. Love this to death. And, you know, star-studded, you know, cast on here. You got Susan Sarandon, Tim Curry, and, you know, Richard.
When did this come out?
I think 75? Yeah. Like, this is some real queer history right here, y'all. Yeah.
That's cool.
If y'all didn't know. So moving on. So I guess, like, the way I interpreted this too, like, it's queer and gay icon, but it's more like gay iconic than icon. It's not one person, but, like, the impact that it has on the community, I feel, is undeniable. So I was like, I got to bring it. I got to give it a spotlight. My next one is Donna Summer on the Radio, which, you know, undeniable queer icon as well. I think we already kind of talked about how disco just kind of changed the landscape of music in the 70s and 80s.
All day, son.
Yeah, like, and Donna Summer, like, and I think similarly with how we were talking about Britney, like, the way that she was able to embody sex in the 70s, like, talking about hot stuff and bad girls, like, who does she think she was, you know? Okay. And queer people, I'm sure, because disco was also just a place to just let free, and, you know, Studio 54 and all that. Like, that was just like a way to just let loose and express yourself the way you wanted to express yourself. And I think Donna Summer really was a staple in that. The song that I am going to pick to play, I'm just going to spoil it, is on, it's like actually a extra on this album, because it was actually released on Barbara Streisand's album, No More Tears, Enough is Enough. Exactly. Yes, what an amazing song. And it has two gay icons, because Barbara Babs, let's talk
I
about
mean,
it.
I think
I'm from New York. So like when you talk about like queer icons, like that's one of them.
I think that was probably gay overdose. It was probably overdose. A bunch of gay dudes in the street dead because of this
like
song.
It's a 7 minute song too.
It's dead.
It's a 7-8 minute song. They were getting their stuff off for 7-8 minutes. Like that's queer history in itself. So, and this is actually a greatest hits album, which I did not know. I actually grew up listening to this album because my mom was a big Donna Summer fan. And I just thought that this was one of her albums, which is hilarious because every song is a hit. So like, I was just like, how did this woman release one album with like nonstop, like hit? And then I realized later that like it was from all of her albums, but still like star-studded album. Amazing. Love her.
Can I mention something real quick about Donna Summer?
Yeah.
Okay. She did all of that in spite of herself because she was a very religious person.
Very Christian.
And all
yeah.
of very Christian, very Christian. And she did this in all of her albums were actually stories. There was always a concept album. Once Upon a Time, I Remember Yesterday, which I Feel Love, which everybody talks about as the thing that is the catalyst for not only disco, but also EDM and everything, which is basically disco. Let's be real about it. I mean, disco never really died. It just mutated into several different forms and all of that. And basically because of I Feel Love and all of that. But that was supposed to be the future of love and everything like that. Which is interesting. I just love that.
Yeah,
I love
like the
that.
The way that Donna Summer has really immersed herself into the music,
right?
Ongoing, like decades after, it's like insane.
Anytime a movie or a TV show needs to show, hey, we are at a gay club, they usually have I Feel Love.
That or Love to Love You, Baby. Either one of those songs, like you know. But Last Dance has to be one of my favorite Donna Summer songs. So like, if I'm going to shout out one of them,
the music director's like, all right, I need some way to show this is a gay club.
And lots of fog. It's always
that. It's a whole experience. It's a whole immersive experience.
Right, exactly.
Well said.
And that's the thing, too.
Well
when
said.
You think about queer icons, like when I think about queerness, I think about community more than identity. So like the way that Donna Summer was able to like get a whole community together with music, like that's what makes her a queer icon or a gay icon to me. Not about her being queer, about her being Christian or any of these other things. Like, it's about how she got a whole community together doing whatever they were doing back
then. And I really believe that she was probably the first, like, I mean, of course there was Diana Ross, but because it was the 60s and the 70s and all of that other stuff, it was like not as pronounced. Mm-hmm. With Donna Summer, ladies and gentlemen, you got it. I mean, you got, if you wanted, you know, queer representation or somebody to be the voice of LGBTQIA+, you got it in Donna Summer. You really did, at least up until like 1984.
Right.
Yeah.
So, yeah, rest in peace to a legend. Like that woman is
clue bombs
out of this world.
Nick, I love Nick.
Mic drop. And to keep it short, I've been talking for a while, so my last album that I brought was The Emancipation of Mimi by Mariah Carey. I am the biggest lamb you'll ever meet. I love Mariah Carey to death. All her albums are stories and songs that just resonate with me to my core. This woman has been through so much in her life, and I think the way that she tells stories is the reason why queer people have resonated so much with her. When I really think about it, also she has that, you know, the bad bitch energy. Like she is the diva. She is, you know, the songstress, and you know how queers love they whistle tones, you know. Right. We're all in the shower trying to hit those high notes. Like, so she definitely represented a lot, you know, early on as a pop star moving into the R&B, hip hop scene. And this album in particular was pretty much the symbolism of like her rising above all of the things that have happened in her life and her career so early on. And she was pretty much reclaiming her space as a woman in the industry, especially like as like a black mixed biracial woman, like all those kinds of things. And she was in her 30s too doing this. So like it was almost kind of just like again, like being that sex symbol, like reclaiming all of the things that people have said about you. Because also she is bipolar. So she had a lot of things stacked against her. And she was saying, like, I'm still here. You're not going to discount me. You're not going to tell me who I am. I am this person. And I'm emancipating myself. And that was what really hit me. I was like, oh my God, like, this is insane. You know, we belong together on here. So, I mean, like, come on.
When come you on. Left, I lost a part of me. Lord Jesus.
Yeah. Real quick, I have to ask. What you said, you were a lamb. What is it? What is lamb breakdown?
So, the two straight men here are like, what the hell is a lamb?
Freddie said he didn't know.
So
that's it.
So in the same way that we were just saying, like, what should we call the people who are listening to this podcast? You know, every diva, every person has, you know, a name for their following. Mariah Carey's fan base is called the Lamely, like the family, but the Lamely, and all of the individual, you know, people are lambs. We're all her lambs. We're all Mariah Carey's lambs.
God, so
I like, know it sounds like strange shepherd. To me too.
That is funny.
She is the shepherd, and no, we are all that is, you know, very willingly following her into the oblivion.
So
this is so wild. Y'all never heard of this.
I've never heard anyone call. Yeah. But for the record, Freddie ain't known either. So. So.
And the Freddy's lambs are vicious. Yeah. Just like the beehive is, the lambs are also very vicious. I feel like
they also, you might as well include Rihanna's Navy as well. Because, she's got the Navy.
Right, the Navy.
So,
that's all
I mean. Right. So one, I think I feel really bad for Tony following up after Michael. Because that was a hell of a breakdown. One of my favorite things about just kind of getting together with any music friends is that the anecdotal part of, like, you know, music for, you know, what it means to a person. And that was really well said, Michael. Thank you for sharing your records. Tony, I'm going to go to you. What did you bring today?
What am I supposed to do?
Look, I got to go after Nick. So, I mean, I'm trying to think. But what records you brought today, Tony?
Yeah, so the whole record choosing process for me was definitely taking into account what other people might be bringing. I automatically thought Nick would be bringing something older, so I stayed away from...
That's a good host, right?
Thanks.
That's a good host mentality.
I was like, Michael's definitely bringing something Mariah, because I know Michael. So I was like, I'll leave Mariah alone. Except, so it's been a whole process of figuring out the order of that. So I brought Beyonce B-Day, which is her second album. I'm not going into story modes.
Do
like Michael.
It. Do it. Do it. We'll do it.
Out of the three, give us. You can pick which one you want to go into story mode. But give us one story mode. It doesn't have to be this one.
All of them are. For me, it was like all three of them are theatrical people, especially with the visual album that B-Day kind of was before doing a visual album. And like, knowing Beyonce did it in like 2 weeks, and it's just like layers of it. And then remembering all the videos that came with it, from Deja Vu to whatever to, I mean, my favorite video is Kitty Cat. And I'm like, it's such a trash video, but it's trashy, but it's a great video. There's just so much, so many aesthetics that go into what Beyonce did with the second album. So there's Blood Orange, Cupid Deluxe, second
Clue Bombs, love them. Dev Hines in this piece.
So Blood Orange, aka Dev Hines, who's been in multiple different bands over the years. The second album as Blood Orange actually reminded me of Nick when I was picking them, because it was Nick was the only person who would play Blood Orange when I went out. It was like I always wanted to hear this out.
And that's why we love.
Yeah.
And that's why we love Nick.
Oh, man.
I was about to say, can we attest to that? Nick brought me up in my early 20s, basically. Oh, Nick, we didn't even really know each other like
right.
that.
But no, we didn't.
I was like, if Nick's going to be there, I'm going.
I was like, I thought Frederick looked like the Jacksonville's version of The Weeknd.
I'm sure. I really did.
I was like, Freddie is so good.
I really did. No. don't take back the compliment. I appreciate you. No, I'm telling you, I really always just want to try to do something different. We do not want to be like everybody else. I'm not like everybody else. I don't put myself in a box. I don't want to put y'all in one either. And nowadays it seems like we're gearing towards more rap and all that other stuff and everything when we go out, but it is what it is. You know, it's not always about me, but the main times when it is about me, I'm going to try to give you guys something different. You all something different. Thank you, y'all. Thank you. Oh man, see, I'm about to get, I'm getting real clip. That's what I do this for. Thank clue you guys. Clue bombs. Thank
you, y'all. Real quick, so is Blood Orange is Blood Orange gay or a gay icon? Is he gay himself or an icon?
He refuses to be put into a box. So okay. He's like,
fair enough.
He doesn't want labels, etc., which is, for me, that's always a cop-out, but it's fine. But just from the visuals that Dev Hines has always given, I'm like, it's so gay to me. Just everything he does, I'm like, it's so over the top and just done well. It's like disco-y, electronic. There's like a fusion of, I don't know, genres in what he does. But
real quick, I think I might have stepped on Michael. Michael, you look like you're about to chime in onto this Nick Fresh love. Did I step on your toes?
100% was trying to do that. Because just to piggyback, because I feel the same way that Fred feels, like that in my early 20s, like I was going out into this really queer venue, or maybe a queer night in a venue in Gainesville, Florida, which, you know, Nick was DJing at. And
what was it called? Name drop.
Call the Atlantic. Do what you like. Gainesville, Florida.
No. Nick bombs. Nick bombs.
And it's just so
sad air horns.
And it was just crazy because, like, in Gainesville, there's not many spaces for queer people. And that was one of the spaces, even if it was just for a thirsty Thursday night, like, that was one of the spaces that you knew that you could be, like, as queer as you wanted. Even if you weren't always surrounded by queer people, you knew the music was going to be queer. You knew the people were going to be queer. You knew that, like, everything around you was going to emulate that energy. It was such a safe space. Like, there's so many nights.
Dance.
Yeah, you just dance. You let loose. You might be doing some things that you don't want to think about. And they be taking pictures and posting them on Facebook the next day. You remember that?
We did.
Yes. So, you know, that was just something that I thought immediately of when Fred was talking about how, you know, he had his early 20s shaped by this man. All raised.
Y'all have no idea how warm I feel about that.
I warned you in the beginning, we was going to give you flowers today.
All right. You get
bouquets. And do what you like. I have to make sure that I say this because it wasn't just me alone. It was a guy named Cameron Gregory who also was a DJ with me. He brought me in. I am very fortunate to be able to get into that space and for him to allow me to share everything, because again, it wasn't necessarily just the queer space. We just wanted people to have fun. That's what it was. And we would do whatever we could. We would look for whatever type of record it was, and Do What You Like allowed me to be as much of myself as I possibly could be, just as much as it was a formative. And I was older than y'all. I was you were
and were
god
and
damn were. But we were much older than you. And it was like, you know, Cameron and I were much older than you, but the bottom line was we were really doing our best to just make sure that everybody was free and safe and just be able to be in a place of love. And I hate it when that night ended. I hated it. Because if it were up to me, we would be doing that night even through the pandemic, everything. We would still be doing it because it was just that important, at least in my mind. How much it was for people coming up and coming from different places. You know how Gainesville is. It's a transit spot. You know, people are coming there for school and to figure themselves out. You know, so I'm very glad to hear that. You're not the only one that says that. You're not the only one, Fred. You know, you're not the only one, Michael. You know, I feel that. And if I died tomorrow, and I hope I don't, getting those compliments, doing these weddings that people came from Do What You Like and everything like that, that's a compliment. Thank you for the flowers. I appreciate y'all. Yeah, thank you.
Tony, go ahead and wrap us up real quick. What was the last record you got?
It's all about me. It's about me. Take that, turn those mics off. It's about me.
Y'all are killing me. Like I said, Blood Orange, Nick, Cupid Deluxe, second album. Third album is Kylie Minogue. It's a best of, but because I can't afford the the album I actually wanted. But
which one was that one?
The what is it? 2001. What is the? I see the cover. Yeah. So that was like immediately when I thought Gay Icons is one of the first songs and videos that popped into my head. And I was like, damn. Oh, I didn't even think about that. And then
I have not heard Michael singing that song. That is a good ass fucking song.
Very good fucking song.
Yeah. I'm sorry.
Absolutely.
So yeah, so when I saw it, I had to...
Is that song on that album?
Yes, the first one.
I hope that is the song we hear tonight. I'm for it. With all these disco lights.
Did she put Locomotion on that?
She might have.
You know, that's the question, because Locomotion was her cover back in the early, the mid-80s, late 80s.
That is a good-looking cover, too.
She did her thing on it, though.
She did. She did.
That's a good look.
Or was she trying to talk about everything after?
Nope.
Yeah. Oh, that Slow was the jam, boy.
All the Lovers?
Oh, my God.
Oh, my God.
Listen, though, Kylie was putting out heat. Like, nobody really, like, I mean, and the you know who admired them the most out of, like, at least in my, you know, growing and experience and everything? It was always straight dudes that loved Kylie Minogue.
I love Kylie Minogue.
Yeah, Kylie's a shit.
So case many in point, though. Everybody.
We told you Adrian is gay.
Listen, man. It's just,
he came here without support.
Bad timing.
He's like,
okay?
This is the time.
Come on, guys.
Tony, thank you for sharing. Nick, how about you, man? What did you bring? You got a stack.
Yeah,
is that more than three?
I really brought a small stack, really, because I wasn't, you know, I didn't really go into detail about, like, when Tony sent me the message, it was like I was kind of a little too busy to really kind of get back to him about. I was just like, yo, I'm down, like, for real. Don't say no more, fam. Like, I'm here. I'm going to be here. I'm not working. I'm thinking about Chinese food anyway. So I might as well just go ahead. Yes, that's what we're getting after this is done. We're getting some shout out to Panda House. Hey, I'm telling you. But anyway, I do have to also just say to Tony, without any collaboration, he said, you know, I'm going to bring some older stuff. Well, you're not wrong, my dear. You're not wrong. In order to know where you're going, you got to know where you've been. So I decided to, in fact, I thought we weren't recording today, but I was going to ask you guys, do you know who this guy is on my shirt? You guys know who this is?
That is not Freddie Mercury, right?
No, it's not. No, not at all. Okay, this man is Patrick Cowley. Patrick Cowley was known as a synth wizard, and he also was one of the first notable artists or figures to die from AIDS in 1982. But what brought him more so to prominence right before he passed, in fact, actually after he passed, because I believe this record was released posthumously, was the record and the synth work that he did on Sylvester's Do You Wanna Funk? And Do You Wanna Funk was pretty much Patrick Cowley featuring Sylvester. Patrick Cowley was all over a lot of records, but he was either, small and small print. Like, you know, of course, you know how they do it with, you know, if you look at old school liner notes, you see like, oh, the personnel, and it's always like kind of smallly listed and everything. But he was kind of the guy that was pushing the idea of what Sylvester's music was sounding like, especially when Sylvester embraced disco, because Sylvester was not originally a disco artist. He was more so jazz. He was singing things like Billie Holiday when he was with the Cockettes back in San Francisco in the late 60s, early 70s. He was doing Diana Ross. He was doing Bessie Smith. He was doing Billie Holiday. He was a jazz man, and he was making sure that everybody knew that, and he was doing it fantastically with his falsetto and everything. That was a segue, ladies and gentlemen, because my first selection is Sylvester, and actually the album where he came. I'm showing the album to everybody. It's called All I Need.
That is a great cover, though.
Oh, my God. Sylvester, I'm telling you. Okay. Now, the thing that makes Sylvester more the figure more than anything in this is that he was unapologetically himself, which was gay, gay, gay. I mean, I'm telling you. I mean, we're talking about somebody that would dress on a whim
and makeup and braids and extensions and all that other stuff. I mean, we're talking about somebody that didn't mind talking about in his records, like Mighty Real was about him. It was a hookup. It was about a bathroom hookup in a club, in a disco, and all that other stuff. For that to blow up the way that it did, and for him to face all of that adversity where you were dealing with all these record companies that would say, we need you to tone it down. In fact, some of his records show that. You know, they either don't have a cover of him at all, or they have him pretty much in a masculine setting and everything like that. So Sylvester basically crawled and walked so everybody else could live and everything. So Sylvester, I think, like, you know, again, and for my thing, all I need is what I think is the album where he was actually being his authentic self. He was on Fantasy Records prior to this. He was also on ABC Records with the Hot Band back in the early 70s. But Mighty Real and Disco Heat and records like that came from the Fantasy label, where they were trying to basically hide him. They were trying to cover him down and everything. And of course, during the disco era, hedonism at its finest, everything like that, you were actually getting actually unadulterated, you know, Sylvester. It was kind of hard to hide. But by the end of the 80s, and of course, that stupid ass disco sucks movement, which was pretty much, I think, and I will always believe after I've done a lot more research and everything, it was pretty much a white man's backlash against black and brown and gay music. You were seeing that. Everybody got a little more conservative. And they did that, tried to do that with Sylvester. While Sylvester was pretty much in his prime and trying to figure out exactly where to go. By 82, Megatone Records is a new label. And it's also out of San Francisco. And it was ran by gay people. So he was able to, on a whim, because thanks to Patrick Cowley and how it blew up, how Do You Want to Funk blew up. By the way, Patrick Cowley did Do You Want to Funk on his deathbed with Sylvester, insisted that Sylvester do it. He ended up getting this deal with Megatone. And Megatone was also, this All I Need album was actually made for somebody else. There was a lady named Gwen Jonet who actually did all of these records and was like, okay, all right, we're ready with the record. What are we going to do? She was like, well, wait, before you do that, I want a bunch of furs. I want a bunch of gowns. I want all of that. And they were like, nah, we can't afford that. Like, you know, who do you think we are? Motown or, you know, Columbia, all of that. So what they did was they dropped her. They took all of her vocals off and Sylvester came in. And this is how this album came out. And you're starting to hear, I mean, on all of these records, in fact, the three that I was selecting, All I Need, Be With You, and Do You Want to Funk, of course, you're getting pretty much, you're getting soul. You're getting high energy, which basically is what ended up becoming the gay version of disco in the 80s. And then Do You Want to Funk, which was also disco and high energy, but it was there. And also, which is within side one as well, Hard Up was one of the first black music videos on MTV before Prince and Michael Jackson. So there we are with that. Sylvester was a groundbreaker, and y'all need to put some respect on his name if you do not already. Okay. My second record is actually, because I went in the order, as you said, Tony, with the format and everything like that, where we have, okay, your first record, three songs, second song, second back to back, right? Second one, two songs. I take things so literal. And the last song, one song. Okay. I decided to go with Sophie for my second choice. Sophie, if you don't know, was a trans person, was a transgender artist. Who was doing a lot of big things within the electronic and hyperpop community. I brought with me today the Lemonade and Hard album, or single. My God, I'm telling you, Sophie was ahead of her time. We're talking about somebody that was thinking ahead of pretty much what we're doing now, what Charlie XCX, who she's a part of that PC music community and all of that. And also shout out to BB Deluxe, who is also from Jacksonville and one of the biggest gay icons that we have to offer in this city, who's also diving into the head first, literally, into the hyperpop music genre and everything. we're getting all of this within pretty much the influence of what Sophie left for us. Lemonade was a hard record. We're talking about, like, it sounded black to me. And I was like, then you find out who Sophie is, what Sophie looks like. And I was like, damn, you doing all that? You know, I loved it. I loved it. And I would always play that out. I love this record. One of my favorite songs of the past 10 years.
Sophie is such a light.
Oh, my God.
And rest in peace to it.
Rest in peace to a legend. Literally.
She had passed probably 5 months ago?
Yeah, 5 months ago.
Somewhere around that time. Oh, it was over quarantine for sure.
Right, for sure.
Like freak accident.
Freak accident. Pretty much. Fell off of a building.
Roof or something like that.
Yeah.
Which is crazy. Wow. And a lot of people don't know she's Grammy nominated. Like, she has such a big presence in the hyperpop community, but also like she's done work for Rihanna. Like the way that music is moving now, because hyperpop was a niche genre. Now it's kind of becoming more commonplace in a lot of different ways. Right. Like, she had a hand in a lot of that.
She really did.
Immaterial is one of my favorite go-to cardio songs. Like, come on.
I'll tell you, Immaterial is the jam. And then also Pony Boy and
Face Shopping. Yeah.
Face Shopping, yes. Oh my God. No, seriously. Like, you know, gay, straight, whatever. If you just want to dance and you want to get into it, like, Sophie has the hardest lyric, had the hardest beats. On it and everything. And again, she needs to be commemorated, get the flowers, even though she's no longer here to receive them. Shout out to Sophie.
And that's what makes her a gay icon, is like the freeness of her music.
Absolutely.
Like, it just like makes you just want to just let loose and Studio 54 style, put on whatever you want to put
disco.
On and just do I'll whatever you want to do.
Any disco at this point.
It's like new age disco in a way.
For real. Oh gosh. So there's my second choice. Sophie, Lemonade, and Hard. Back with Hard. The last record is a wild card. It's from a man named Ronnie Dyson. I'm not sure if he was gay or straight. Ronnie Dyson started in Broadway. Had a song back in, I believe, 1970 called "If You Let Me Make Love to You, Then Why Can't I Touch You?" But it was presented in a pop package. So basically it was a very pop record. Like, think of like It's Not Unusual by Tom Jones, or like some of the things that Burt Bacharach came out with, and how Bacharach and David put together, with Dionne Warwick and anybody that they produced at the time, even like The Fifth Dimension. Shout out to Marilyn McCoo, who's still out here killing the game. And she's a gay icon as well. Ronnie Dyson, why I picked this record, which is called You Better Be Fierce. It was put out in 1983. And I do not think, I've been trying my hardest to kind of go through records that weren't specifically for a gay audience that had the vernacular that this had. Like, you know, You Better Be Fierce. Let's start off with that. So there's that. And then there's also like the rap in the middle. I'm not sure if he wants to go home with this woman or he's just sitting there and admiring her. But he's like, yeah, you know, you're all pressed and you're white on white and I'm truly scared of you. And, you know, get on down, girl. You know you bad and all that other stuff. So if he wasn't trying to be in the closet or trying to be in the closet, if anybody heard this record, he definitely wasn't in the closet there. That was like an open secret, like Luther Vandross, after you listen to You Better Be Fierce. Shots fired, and I'm not here to play games, ladies and gentlemen. On Next Spin,
I thought somebody was gonna bring Luther. I really did.
And in fact, shout out to Luther Vandross, who also helped revolutionize music during the disco era. Let's remember, like, all of the things that he was putting out, the vocal arrangements for background. He wasn't necessarily the vocalist for all those disco records. He was doing the background vocal arrangements, and that had an influence for the next 5-10 years of how music was sounding. Even during the New Jack Swing era, the way that Teddy Riley was doing records and doing the vocal arrangements and everything like that was very reminiscent of things that Luther Vandross was doing. So those are my three, and there we go. I don't want to talk too much. I want to hear what you brought, Bada.
Teddy Riley's Panamanian. Just had to
our Panamanian correspondent, hello. Adrian That's Ross, me. Everyone.
Hello. Dog.
Like, how's someone always Panamanian?
Like, you can imagine, when we had our first, I think our first or second meetup, we started thinking, like, well, we should open this up to guests and things like that. I think it was a unanimous call that we all said, you know, Nick Fresh has got to come, you know, immediately. And thank everything you. I thought, you know, my expectation of what that would look like has already been blown, you know, to proportion. Thank you for the thank music you. History lesson.
Thank you.
Thank you. I'm going to be very quick about mine because I am an ancillary player today. I mean, it'll be a U4 that'll primarily play some music. I'll maybe play a couple at the end. But the records I brought, for one, I brought this Elton John, Goodbye Yellow Brick Road. I'll be honest, I was looking for an album called Honky Chateau because it's got Rocket Man. And I love Rocket Man. I just wanted to hear Rocket Man tonight. Could not find that record anywhere, even though it's like a pretty, not, you know, I think it's like $5 on Discogs. I still could not find it around here. But it's got Benny and the Jets. It's got Goodbye Yellow Brick Road. It's got Grey Seal. So I'll probably play one of those. I also brought Prince and the Revolution, Purple Rain. Damn shame I didn't have this record already in my collection. So when I came across it, I was like, I gotta pick it up.
How dare you?
I know. I'm dropping the ball. But once again, I'll say Prince was probably the first artist that made me question masculinity. I think that's the credit I'd like to give Prince, is that watching him perform and listening to his music as a young kid baffled me, but also made me ask very important questions on what does it mean to be a man, you know? So yeah. And then
Clues bomb for that one, baby.
And then I brought, and I'll go ahead and absolutely admit this is a bootleg, but I brought Frank Ocean Blonde. I just realized there's no E at the end of that. Was that how it was on the cover? Okay, it was. Yes. Perfect. Right. But yeah, I mean, what can I say about Frank Ocean that hasn't been said? I mean, first, I think what Frank Ocean means to me is he is the first artist that I felt like that is my, you know, like my peer or my colleague, or, you know, someone like same age, probably had the same influences. It just felt more personal, you know, when he came out, and then it just resonated with me. And like I said, when that first album dropped, and just like how that album kind of just changed things for me, I felt like it really made me kind of just look at music and in a whole different light. So I brought Blonde, and I'll probably play Self-Control. And then just in case we got time, I did bring Beyonce, Me, Myself, and I, the single version, because it's probably my favorite Beyonce.
That's
song.
Michael over here snapping.
Absolutely.
No need to cry. To come on.
Yes, absolutely. As soon as I get another Tecate and Me and we get that song playing, you'll definitely hear me sing it. Oh, yeah. But I think we're at a good stopping point. This has been our longest episode. I think it's been our most, I think it's been one of our better ones. So I'd like to go ahead and give a round of snaps to our two guests. Of course, I want to thank Freddie, Tony, and Adrian for being amongst us today as well. And yeah, we're going to go ahead and wrap up this episode, get some music playing. But for our listeners out there, if you aren't following Next Spin on Instagram, do yourself a favor. Do so. Tony runs that account. Like I said, he's our CEO and founder of this here podcast and club. Give him a follow. And if you're interested in following any of the folks, whether that be Nick, Adrian, Tony, I'm all over the place. Sorry, Freddie. I will have those links within the show notes, so we don't need to go around. But I'll have those links embedded. Nick, thank you for joining us. Michael, thank you so much for joining us. We are out, ladies and gents.
See you later, spinheads.
Damn. Where were you? Where were you with the first three?
I'm right here, dog. Shout out to DMX.
Be well, everyone. Peace.